Hello, Bindu.
Hey, Joey.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
Oh,
It's been a
good.
minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I'm not sure when the last podcast has been recorded, but I'm guessing a year ago, maybe longer.
I think we were mid-pandemic.
Mid-pandemic. Yeah, that sounds
Yeah.
so far away, but it's still so close. Yeah. I was
I know.
talking to someone last week that who said like this time around a year ago, everything went back into lockdown. I was like, holy shit. Yeah, it's just one year ago. It's crazy.
It sort of has skewered with our time perception.
Weird, right? And in some kind of way, it's also useful because a lot of things, if I can't put it into a timeline, I'm like, okay, was this pre-pandemic or post-pandemic? It really helps in the timeline. Yeah. But anyway, thanks for taking the time to do this today. I want to dive deeper into the topic of negotiating with you. And that's because, yeah, we've been talking about it. It's something you recognize a lot with artists as well. And what I notice as well is that artists somehow struggle with negotiations when it's about a record deal, a management deal, or when it's an issue between a label and a manager or whatever. Like, it's complicated, and it's not necessarily one of the most favorite things an artist wants to do. So I think it's a useful thing to talk about how you can become a better negotiator, and yeah, how to learn from it, let's say.
Yeah, for
So
sure. I think it's a great topic.
yeah, well, you came up with it, so yeah.
It's also one of my favorite topics.
Yeah.
I love negotiations.
As we say in Dutch, there comes the monkey out of the sleeve, huh?
Yes, but that fits no monkey in my sleeve.
Exactly. Okay, so in what kind of situations does an artist negotiate?
That's a good question. Basically, in every situation where there is an offer on the table for the artist, and that offer doesn't match your expectations, or the second position in which you would negotiate is when there is a conflict or perhaps an escalation of a situation that could lead into a conflict. So those are basically the two situations where you would negotiate. One, when you have an agreement that is offered to you, and two, in the case of conflict.
If there's a problem, yeah. And the one that's probably most common is like, for example, when there's a record deal or something being offered. And is it the artist that does the negotiation, or should it be a manager or a booker or?
Yeah, it really depends. It depends on the relationship that you have with the other party. So you always have to think about what is it that I want from this? If you are an artist or a songwriter and you have a publishing agreement or recording agreement, you should always think like, what's the aim? What's the purpose for me? What people often do not take into account enough is that every agreement that you make ultimately builds towards your career in the music industry. So you have to always approach it strategically. So that is one thing. When you ask like who should do the negotiation, well, it depends. It depends on number one, your relationship, but two, also what position you have, or your manager, or in some instances, your lawyer has towards that party. If it is a difficult negotiation, then maybe a seasoned negotiator is more suited to do negotiation. If it is a negotiation purely on commercial terms, or whether or not it is to initiate a collaboration of some sorts, then the artist could do it. You can go to the label and or to the publisher, have a chat with them, see if that would be a good fit, talk person to person. Is this A&R guy or gal somebody that I could work with? Yes or no? That's a very personal feeling. So you would have to do that by yourself and maybe your manager's presence, but certainly not the lawyer. I mean, the lawyer cannot decide. I cannot decide for you, Joey, this is a good fit because this guy is looks really nice and kind.
Yeah, and that's probably the hard part as well, because what I've noticed myself, but also what I notice with clients, is that most relationships in the industry are being built on a personal base.
Mm-hmm.
So you connect with, let's say, an A&R manager on a party, you send some music to him or her, and they want to sign the song, and you have the connection with that person.
Yeah.
But in some moments, it might be better to actually have someone do it for you. It really depends. Yeah. It's really a vague line on, especially when you become bigger as an artist, like who should do the negotiation?
Yeah. Ultimately, when it's professional negotiation, I would always say send your lawyer in. And that has a few benefits. First of all, you're being buffered, or the lawyer is the buffer between you and the counterparty.
But that happens with bigger artists, right? That's what I noticed with bigger artists.
Yes, certainly with bigger artists, but also for like a smaller artist, it might not be a bad thing to have your lawyer go in, because that buffer could be useful. If there is a disagreement or you don't come to an agreement, the relationship between the artist or songwriter and the counterparty is still intact. And that's the big advantage. So you don't burn any bridges.
Always point and say it's his fault. It's not.
Yes, yes. You can say, well, I had nothing to do with it. But if it is, for example, a more difficult contract, at a certain point, it will go to the legal team. So you might start out as the artist or the songwriter to negotiate, but then it will be moved up the chain and you will get a draft agreement. Then a legal will come into play and will be introduced to the conversation. Probably your manager will jump in. And when you have all these parties, artist or songwriter, manager, lawyer on one side, your side, and the legal team on the other side, then there's like 5-6 people that have to say something about one agreement. And then the purpose is to all put the noses in the same direction to actually come to an agreement. And in practice, that is proven sometimes not to be that evident.
Yeah. It's super hard, let's say, because I know quite a bit about communication, and there's also one thing I really know: humans suck at good communication. So I can imagine if you sit at a table with 5 different people, and you want the goal is to get them all on the same on the same line or direction or what you say, that's almost impossible. It's hard.
Yeah, and that's why it is so important to, at a certain time, the artist and the manager even should step away and leave it to the professional negotiator or the lawyer in that sense to take over. Because then otherwise it would be just become way too complicated.
But is that also for like a starting artist? Because I can imagine there are some costs involved. Mm-hmm. Is that worth the investment?
That's a good question. And that's definitely something that the artist or the songwriter themselves will need to assess if it is worth the investment. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, if it is just a small one-off track and don't expect it to be a very big hit, you could say, well, it doesn't look like it's going to be worth the investment of 2 or 3 hours of legal fees. However, the counter side of that is that you never know what a track is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It might be picked up on that later, or maybe in 20 or 10 years, if it is synced, for example, by one fluke accident, who knows?
Yeah.
You just don't know. And when then you are stuck with an agreement that is not good, that trickles down to the rest of the lifespan of that song.
Yeah.
You cannot go back in time and fix it.
Yeah, so that's something you should really take into consideration. Like every release could be your next big hit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sign a bad deal, you're screwed.
Yeah, and I also say to my boys and gals, like, think forward. If you set a certain standard and if you say, well, I will not negotiate, that also sends a message to the other party.
Yeah.
They will think, oh, but Joey is an easy guy. We can give him a contract and he will sign it straight away.
But that's the next point, because I really noticed that with my clients, at least, and with myself as well when I was young. I always thought, like, I am not in the position to negotiate because I should be happy to even get signed with this label, to be privileged to get the deal, you know. So I kind of signed the first draft of every agreement, because I was like, yeah, I'm the one who's privileged. I can't negotiate this on any point. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I hear it all the time as well. More with the more starting artists than, of course, then with the seasoned artists, for sure. But the same goes for both, really, because what is a negotiation? If you break it down, like purely look at the definition, what is negotiation? It's a dialogue, right? Yeah. It's a dialogue about whether or not you will do something together. And there is always that relationship of dependency. If I didn't need you, you would not be sitting at my table.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so that means that you have a position of power as an artist or as a songwriter. The label wants you to sign something, right?
Yeah.
So don't underestimate that. It is very common for artists and songwriters to underestimate that position. I always say, don't be afraid of no. I mean, no is not a no. And just like yes is sometimes not a yes. But no, it's just a starting point.
Yeah.
When you get the first draft, that is basically when it starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I always thought as well, or what I realized much too late, is that the first draft version is probably in the best favor of the label.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what they hope to achieve. And now it's up to you to say, okay, I'm okay with this, but this is not negotiable. This percentage has to go down, blah, blah, blah. But the first draft is in the best favor of the label or the manager or whoever sends it to you. It's just weird that most artists are kind of maybe insecure or something, so that they don't dare to negotiate.
Yeah, I think that what is good to realize in any circumstance is that the party who gives you the draft agreement is the party who drafted the agreement. And they've drafted it from their perspective and from their point of view, from their context, from their needs and desires, really. And somewhere in the nitty-gritty or in the legalese, there's a part for Joey as well. But we'll make it, you know. We'll minimize it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the one thing you need to realize. But then the other thing is also always negotiate. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid that, oh, but then I won't get signed. If it is not a good match, then a disagreement is better.
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. Like if the counterparty is trying to screw you over, it's probably not the right partner for you to work with.
Yeah, yeah. A classic example of that is that people say, "Yeah, here's the draft agreement. I want it back signed tomorrow."
Yeah.
The artist says, "Like, oh no, I can't do that. I still have to." And then they're like, "Oh yeah, probably can't negotiate then."
Yeah, exactly. Like put time pressure on it.
Yeah, yeah. It's fake. Just between you and I. Doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. Yeah. Good tip. And what happens, because this happens all the time as well, what if you get back to a label and say, okay, nice draft, but this and this and this and that, and then you get a response from them saying, this is not negotiable.
And then you smile wearily and you say, thank you, that's an interesting point of view. Might I suggest the following?
Yeah. And what if they just are not willing to negotiate? Like, should you?
Yeah, if they're truly, truly not willing to negotiate and it's their way or the highway, then how will you make that relationship work?
Yeah.
Because is that then their attitude towards the artist in general, our way or the highway? It is a collaboration. I mean, at least in the ideal sense, it should be. Then that would be a huge red flag for me.
Yeah.
And if somebody, especially legal, for example, sometimes they say, we always do it like this, or we never do this, we never change these clauses.
It's how everyone does it.
Yeah. It's how everybody does it. Well, yes, but that's still not a reason.
No.
That's still not an explanation. And if I think the most important thing for me at that point is to ask where that conviction really comes from. Why is it that you do it like that? Because there obviously is a reason or a fear that they have about a risk that they don't want to give away.
Yeah.
But if you then can think creatively around such a risk and maybe come up with a language that suits both parties and yeah. reframe it, you might actually not have to deal with that kind of a deadlock.
Yeah. Yeah, because in the end, it's about creating a deal, a fair deal that works for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
You both should be comfortable in the deal. Otherwise, yeah. it's probably not going to work out because the balance will shift during time.
Yeah.
And that's what, at least what I'm noticing with a lot of artists these days, is that in the past 5 years, so many deals have been signed where 70% of the royalties went to the label,
mm-hmm.
And artists were left with 30% of streaming royalties or whatever mm-hmm. after deduction of all the costs. And at that moment, it kind of felt like the best thing to do because they felt there was no room for negotiation because everyone did it, right? And now they're left with no income. It was like, where the hell did all my money go?
Mm.
And the balance is starting to shift towards, okay, this isn't fair anymore.
Yeah, but watch out. I mean, fair in a negotiation context is a tricky word because my perception of fairness might be completely different than yours.
That's true. It's a personal preference.
Yes, and if I say to you, Joey, that is not a fair deal, how will you react?
Yeah, it depends on what fair is, you know?
Yeah, but it will spark mostly a defensive, but certainly an emotional reaction.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And then that can sidetrack you from actually reaching that agreement. But I agree with you. I mean, if you look at the terms that are being negotiated, look at the bigger picture. If, of course, a label is doing a lot of promo, doesn't have or at least has fair recoupable costs, etc., and they have a good promotional machine and releasing on a certain label gives you that kind of exposure that you are looking for, there's always trade-offs in negotiations.
Sure. Yeah.
That the ideal contract does not exist.
No.
Because there is, especially in business, there will usually be some form of compromise or some form of giving in. Not always, of course. There's mm-hmm. certainly break points that you cannot give into, but don't throw away, I would say, the child with the bathwater,
mm-hmm.
and really think like, okay, but look at an agreement in its totality. What is the sum of all parts going to do for me down the line, really?
Yeah, it comes back to the first thing you kind of mentioned, which is, what am I trying to get out of this deal? It differentiates per position. If you're a starting artist, you probably have to give in a bit more points, which I like to call investing, as mm-hmm. in it's okay to invest and give like 20% extra of your royalties if the label is able to provide a lot of value for your brand.
Yeah.
But it always should be in some sort of balance. And the bigger you get, the more you should realize like, okay, am I benefiting from this label or is this label benefiting from me?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, both could be possible, you know, but if the label and your interest are still running parallel and there is a mutual beneficial relationship, that doesn't mean that is wrong. It's not that the label can't benefit at all and that the artist should have all the benefits or vice versa.
Yeah.
It should be at least a discussion and a mutually consented agreement in that sense that you will do things a certain way.
Yeah.
But I think what most people skip is making the inventory first, in the sense that what is it that I want? Do I find the royalty percentage really important? Do I find recoupable costs very important? Have I thought about different compensation structures? For example, how about a certain percentage, but over 1 million of streams, an extra bonus?
Yeah.
So there is, under the Dutch law, you can agree a lot of things, but that gives you the room for creativity. But that creativity in contracts, label agreements, publishing agreements is not often used.
Yeah, that's 100% right. Like I definitely have used that way, like not enough in my time. I find out about these things too late, but it's for everyone who's listening now, it's something good to think about. There's always room for creativity in agreements as well. As long as the counterparty also agrees on it, of course.
Yeah, and I do think that on labels and publishers, they need to also realize that the world has changed. Yeah. For example, agreements in perpetuity, that's truly something of the medieval times. We don't do that anymore.
I heard it's not even legal anymore, right?
No, exactly. Yeah.
It's that you can kind of pull back your rights if you can prove that the label isn't pushing your song anymore.
Yeah, but yes, that's a different new kind of nuance. But even recently, I saw an agreement that was offered to somebody, and it had a perpetual rights transfer. And I went back to the guys like, "Sorry, but the Middle Ages are truly over."
Yeah. What's the official amount which they can demand?
It has to be a reasonable term. And so, but it also means that reasonable means like, how long do you think, as a label or as a publisher, do you think that you can deliver good services to that artist?
Yeah.
Is that 10 years? Is that 15 years? Is that 20 years? I also understand that from their perspective, they need some time to do the investment. Then they will need some time to benefit from their investment. Yeah. For sure. So a certain length will definitely be necessary, but 50 years, 60 years, 80 years.
Yeah,
that's a big no-no.
Yeah. But even like if you talk about investments with labels, you know, like most agreements I see is like, okay, we're going to invest €200 in social media ads and we're going to create artworks.
Yeah.
That's it. I was like, okay, let me pay those €250 ahead and I'll skip the whole deduction part and I'll get more of my rights. It's just that most labels somehow are still in the medieval times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Like they've never updated their agreements.
Or they've never updated the way that they work. And nowadays, the role of a label has also changed. And that's it used to be artists and developments and facilitating recordings. We all do that on our laptops, of course, thanks to DAWs, which is obviously fantastic. But it certainly made that the label's role has changed. And not anymore into the producer of the records, but more of the, and that's maybe a wishful thinking of my part, more of the curator of music. Yeah. And I think that some labels do a very good job, and there's some very capable A&Rs, but I think that the A&R role should be taken a bit more seriously in the sense that do your due diligence, be the research and development party of the label, if so to speak, so that you can curate a certain catalog that has value aside from your marketing power and being signed to a certain label.
That's what I wanted to add exactly. Like, I think it's the curation, but these days where most labels are really able to add value is the marketing and the promotion part of things. Like that's, I kind of see labels as marketing agencies these days.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just that most labels didn't really switch into that mindset yet. So maybe that'll come later.
Yeah.
What are some like practical tips, maybe two or three practical tips, that an artist can bring into the conversation?
Do your homework. So write down what your wishes are from a certain agreement. Take a blank sheet of paper, just write everything down. I did that exercise with a client of mine a while ago. It was in a different situation, but I said to him, like, let's write down like 50 demands that you can come up with. 50. And he said, like, you're insane. And I said, either way, try it. And we did come up with 60. So if you push, so if you push yourself, then you can truly make that inventory. make sure that you know yourself and know where you are going with your career, or what, why you want to sign this particular track with a certain label. The days that, and I think you and I said that before, the days that you would sign a record deal and then hope that fame and fortune would come to you, those days are over.
Yeah,
that was also the medieval times. But nowadays, you have to strategically think about, okay, how will I construct almost my career? That helps by approaching that in a strategic way. The second tip I want to give you is communicate with your team. So manager, if you have one, your lawyer, if you have one, how the process will be. Who will do the initiating of the conversation? Who will do the negotiation of the commercial terms? And then at a certain point, manager will have to converse with the legal about the legal things, because sometimes what you see is that managers have agreed on commercial terms, which then are not possible, or of which the lawyer thinks like, ah, but it should have been different, or there's some issues with that. So make sure that the communication is clear and that you're all well informed of what is going on and where you are in the negotiation process.
Yeah. Again, communication, and that's hard.
It is hard, but it's certainly necessary.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with it.
And the third one is, aside from inventory preparation, prepare your team. And the third one, and maybe an important one, is don't be afraid to negotiate. Go in the negotiation. Do it and say no to a label. No, this is just not good enough.
Yeah, feels great to do it.
It sounds like you have experience with it. But always, do negotiate, but always be respectful. Because deals do not explode or don't happen because your demands are too high or your demands are unreasonable or there is no money. It usually is because at a certain point, the other party doesn't feel heard or disrespected.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good addition, definitely. Is there any kind of book maybe or something that you could recommend about this, or did you read anything about it, or?
Oh, I've read a lot of books, and in my own book, The All-Round Musician, I have a chapter.
That's the last time we spoke, because then
that's
your book was started. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a chapter on contracts and on negotiation as well. So some of the tips are in there as well.
Nice.
On particular books of negotiation, it depends on how far you want to go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. I've read... negotiation as if your life depends on it. That's the subtitle. Wait, negotiating. Split the difference.
Never by Chris Voss. Yeah, yeah.
Chris
yeah.
Voss, amazing
yeah.
book.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that one too. Yeah. It is, well, basically, if you talk about negotiations, there are a couple of styles. Chris Voss obviously comes from the FBI style.
Yeah.
And they have a different setup. If you look at the Harvard style, for example, that is the mutual gains style, meaning that you are working from a collaborative approach. And that's where you have those concepts as your best alternative. In an FBI negotiation setup, your best alternative really doesn't exist.
No, it's like getting as less damage as possible.
You can't say to a hostage taker, for example, well, my best alternative is this. there is none. And apologies for the maybe crude example, but it does show that. And in those cases, you have no alternative.
Yeah.
And it's not debatable whether or not somebody lives or not. Those are completely different approaches. What I also think is that Chris Voss, while he is very inventive, and I love that book as well, it gives some good pointers, for sure. It's also very American.
Yeah.
And I think a last, maybe a fourth tip is take into account your counterparties' cultural differences, because we may sometimes not be aware of it, but there's already cultural differences between you and I. You're yeah. Dutch, I'm Flemish, okay? I've lived here for 22 years, so I've moved a bit to the Dutch side, but still, Americans do business very differently than we do.
Yeah.
And then the people in the Benelux or in Europe in general. Yeah. If you work with people from the Middle East or with China, that's also a completely different approach. And if you're not sensitive to that, to those cultural differences, you might actually maybe unintentionally, but offend your counterpart, and that may result in the loss of an agreement, and that's just a shame.
Yeah, it's a good addition as well. Like, yeah, definitely. Especially as an artist, the bigger you get, the more international you work.
For sure,
And the more cultures you meet and you work with. So that's definitely something I've encountered with as well. Especially when you go to Asia, it's just literally a different world there. So it's good to get deeper into that. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and Scandinavians are also different in their approach to things. So don't be insensitive to that, but always take it into account, like empathy and emotion and perspective. Sometimes people say emotions, they don't belong on the negotiation table, but they do. You're dealing with people. People have emotions. That's just creators, musicians are emotional people.
Yeah, I think it's really I think that's an important focus for the future for the whole industry itself. To bring back the emotion in the industry, you know, it's okay that it's a business. It's okay that there's money being made, but you're working with people, and emotion is a big part of this industry, especially with creative people, as you mentioned. They're almost 100% emotions, and it's hard for them to be rational.
So it's
an interesting focus.
Yeah, it takes us back to your first question, like who should do the negotiation? Well, because of artists being sometimes emotional, you have to know yourself. If you know that you can't control your emotions at a certain point, don't be this talking party. Then say to your lawyer or to your manager who comes with you to a negotiation, you do the talking, I'll be there to back you up and to provide you from input.
Yeah, true. Well, I want to thank you for all these amazing tips.
You're most welcome.
It's been an insightful 30 minutes, we could say. Everything out, 30 minutes.
It felt like a crash course for sure. Yeah. But we'd definitely recommend people to start working with it. Start small, but start not to be afraid of negotiation.
Exactly. And if they want to know more, they can dive into your book and find out more about it. And if there's really like a specific case they're dealing with or whatever, they can obviously reach out to you. Because eventually I think every case is completely different and needs to be treated differently. It's completely custom tailored. But still, it's good to know the basics of everything and like at least know somewhat of what you're dealing with.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So thanks again.
You're most welcome. Good luck to everybody negotiating.
Yeah, and hope to speak to you again. Let's say a year or something would be nice.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice.
Love to. Thank you for having me, Joey.
No problem. Bye.
Bye.